This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast, which offers education and training for referees of all levels. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a Level 5 referee affiliated with Somerset FA, and this is PGMO Observer and Southwest Pool Observer Coordinator Rich Mellon, and my mentor.
Hi, Darren.
Yes.
I'll be tutor this time. You can be the mentee. Yeah?
Yes. Okay, sorry. We had a little bit of a role reversal.
Yes.
In the last episode. Yeah. In fact, we're actually going to pick up where we left off, because we were doing pitch inspections in the last episode and we didn't really finish it in time. We ran out of time, because what we've done is we've set ourselves a 20-minute target, which we're disciplining ourselves with and doing okay. We've gone over a few times, but not too bad on the whole.
No.
In a manner
we're
of speaking.
We're pretty good.
And our 20 minutes will start now.
From grassroots to the World Cup.
This is the Referees World podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
So it's the Referees World podcast, and we're picking up where we left off before. Pitch inspections. We'd covered the rain and the wet stuff. We'd covered the fog. Mm-hmm. We covered the markings on a pitch and whether or not you should abandon a game because the markings weren't laid out properly. But we didn't cover a frozen pitch or hard ground, Rich.
Yeah. Yeah, let's start.
But we touched on it, but we didn't go into it in great detail.
Let's start talking early season. Early season.
Okay.
And the you know, it's been a lovely summer. Pitches have got covered in with some nice grass, et cetera, et cetera. But the pitch markings are starting to crack and they're separating. And so consequently, they prove to be unsafe for the players to play on. And it's not just the touchline that actually gets cracks, and that it's the halfway line, the penalty area, and even the goal area and the goal line. So, you know, there's a lot to consider when you're looking at hard grounds. And the bounce of the ball has certainly got, you know, the players guessing at what's going to happen next. And the first touch is important to them. And consequently, safety. Mm. We're always, when we're doing pitch markings, pitch inspections, we're always thinking player safety and our own safety as well. Because in these situations whereby it's hard ground with the cracks starting to appear, we're, you know, putting ourselves at risk, twisted ankles, you know, knees being dislocated and et cetera, through the pitch simply being a little bit iffy.
And if you have a pitch that has been chewed up for whatever reason, maybe earlier on, a couple of weeks before, we'd had some heavy rain and the pitch was chewed up in some way. When that gets hard, it becomes all knobbly and it becomes very, very difficult to run on or walk on or play on.
A rotted pitch starts sort of drying out and, you know, it's been played on, it's not been rolled. Those do provide problems for the players, and again, it comes back down to that word of safety.
Of course, the player would then have to consider what footwear they decide to take to the game, wouldn't they?
If they're allowed to consider what footwear. You know, some players at grassroots levels don't have many options. Mm. Some have no options. So, you know, it is one of those situations whereby you can't presume. You cannot presume on that. So look at the field of play. What can be done to help it if it's questionable in your opinion? Have you got gaps appearing, cracks appearing? Can you fill those cracks in? Is there something to fill the cracks in that is safe and will allow the game to go ahead?
Surely a pitch inspection in that kind of condition is going to have the same, you're going to have the same processes in your head as if it was a frozen pitch.
Very similar, aren't they? They are similar, because when you go into that frozen state of the pitch, and that's, let's say, January, February for us here in the UK, and other times during the season in around the world. But what are you looking for when you arrive and you know it's a chilly, icy morning? What are you going out there looking for?
I think at the level that I play, the teams will contact me before I even turn up anyway. They will know. It's when you have the not sure decisions to make.
Play at all costs.
Yeah.
There are some that want to play at all costs.
Particularly when you get to the end of the season and it's all about grabbing the points. And if you've had a season like what we're having this year where so many games are going to have to be played at the end of the season to make up the losses because of what COVID's done, people are going to be desperate to play, aren't they?
Make a genuine decision for player safety And don't let anything else influence your decision-making. And I mean influence your decision-making regarding suspensions, injuries, you know, all sorts of things people will sort of make excuses for. But you as referee have got player safety at the forefront of your decision-making. Yeah.
Yeah, so the key test
get
is...
Get onto the field of play.
Yeah, get onto the field of play.
Yeah.
The key test is the obvious one.
Key test? That's cricket, isn't
the
it?
The key test? Well, apparently so. That's where it all started.
I remember the key test for the first
Well, a man of your age, you would do. You were probably there at that game, that very first one.
I could have been.
So, yeah, the key test. For those who don't know what the key test is, perhaps newer referees and... younger referees are quite unsure. Just explain what the key test is,
well,
Rich.
Well, the key test became a feature in testing the cracks on the field of play in cricket. Now, the key test all then transferred to football as regards, can we get a key into the ground? On cricket, they don't want to get a key into the ground because it's too much of a pudding. But on football-wise, when you put a key into a frozen area, it's like, you know, trying to cut a piece of chicken that's been in the freezer for a few months. It's not possible.
Great analogy. It's
awful analogy, but well, that was
oh,
me.
You need some more caffeine, but, mate,
yeah,
I tell you.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, you see what I'm trying to say. You know, why? What are you looking for when you try the key test? Have you done it, Dan?
Yeah, I've done it a couple of times. In fact, I think I did it on that night that we discussed in the last episode where I had to call the game off. And it's not one that I've used loads of because I think most referees will get a pretty good feel once you arrive at the ground and you walk across and you'll know straight away whether or not you're going to play it.
Right, okay. Yeah, yeah, you get a feel for it, you know.
So literally, I've put the key in, and if the key goes in up to the end of the straight bit before it turns into the round bit.
And we're talking about a Yale key here,
we're talking
aren't we?
Yale keys, aren't we?
Okay, okay. God, we are off to some old talk. How do we get to this? A Yale key. Right, okay. What's a Yale key got to do with football?
A Yale key.
Key test.
Key test, yes.
Okay. Describe the key test. What influenced you to not play the game or you decided to play the game?
For me, it would be a case of walking across the field of play to start with, as we've already previously discussed. I would know underfoot whether I'm going to play. I think the key test is a final confirmation for myself.
Yeah.
You've got to bear in mind, because if you turn up at 10, 11 in the morning and the forecast is to be a dry day and sunny and the temperature might rise a little bit, then you might be in luck because...
Yeah, you get some winter sunshine, it might defrost.
Absolutely. And if you are local to where you're going to be playing and you've got time to go down in the morning and do an inspection, then great. By all means, I would suggest go and do it.
Yeah.
The problem lies when you have to travel 20 or 30 miles to get to your game
yeah.
because you're not going to be able to go there first thing in the morning. Yeah. You're going to be relying on somebody
Would you phone up a colleague to go and have a look? Would you phone up the club directly?
I'd probably phone the club directly because they're going to have a better knowledge of the ground based on the weather forecast. And, you know, particularly where we live in Somerset, and I'm going to use Weddon Cross as an example here. Weddon Cross is from Taunton. It's 26 miles away. It's a 45-minute drive. But Weddon Cross is quite high up.
It's beautiful in the summer.
It's a stunning place to go in the summer. But it's quite high up. So in Taunton, we may be able to play. But in Weddon Cross, it's going to be quite considerably cold. You're up on Exmoor.
Exmoor Rangers.
So, yeah, and you're going to have quite a difference in temperature on a pitch which is quite bumpy anyway.
And it's a slope.
And it's a slope as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what may play here may not get played up there.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're definitely right. I mean, the key test is there to decide if the stud will go in, isn't it? That's why we're using
the
key
theory,
to see if the stud will go in. And, you know, it's a good gauge of could you play the game or will you call it off, you know? Icy, frosty conditions, you know, you're skating around like Bambi on ice. So it's a risk, isn't it? It's a risk. And I think sometimes we're too eager to play a game and injury comes from it.
It's funny you say that because when we get back after lockdown, there are going to be so many players craving to play the game and they're going to want to play whatever. So there is a risk that they might try to pressure you even more so now because they want to get the games under their belt.
Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, so many games. I think, let's say, during this month of lockdown from beginning of November to beginning of December, I think, we're going to lose, grassroots-wise, 6 games. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to be fed into the season somewhere else. And hopefully we don't have the bad weather that we lose more games, because we'll probably have half the season to complete the games in about 2 months. Mm. And that will be absolutely manic, because players play for Saturday clubs. They play for a Sunday club, you know, and it's just going to be mad.
They'll be playing two games a day for about 3 weeks.
Mm. I wouldn't.
I don't know.
I don't know. I won't go there, just in case.
So, so key test is obviously the one that most people can recognise and associate themselves with.
Gauges the stud depth if it's possible to play.
Are there any other areas?
I think that's about it for that follow up on what we've discussed last podcast and this one now. I think we've sort of thrashed that one.
Any other random areas where you may not have a game weather-wise? I suppose that's pretty much it, isn't it?
That's it. You know, I think the other thing that I think you alluded to this on your previous description of when you've done a game at Taunton under 18s versus Bridgie under 18s, certain parts of the pitch are influenced by the weather. Mm-hmm. Under a stand, you know, by the shadow of the stand, whereas other parts of the pitch get the warmth of the winter sun on it. So there is a conflict between the two areas on the field of play. So all I would say to our colleagues there is be aware of that and make sure you do a thorough inspection.
It's the Referees World Podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon, and we are here every week now. On Friday, which is when the podcast gets released, it'll appear at 5 o'clock every Friday. Well, that's the theory behind it. And so far, it seems to have worked, Rich. So
yeah, I haven't overslept.
No. And we're doing it weekly as opposed to monthly, which is great, because it means we can cram a few more episodes at you and discuss things in finer detail, but over a shorter period of time, i.e. 20 minutes. And we're 10 minutes into this episode.
We are.
So we're moving on now. And what are we moving on with?
Well, do you want me to call a topic to you?
Yeah, go on, let's throw it. We've got 10 minutes.
A topic that we struggle with.
Go on.
Okay, and this is... I don't know anybody that's an expert in this part of the game.
Go on.
Advantage.
Oh, advantage. Oh, beautiful. Okay. Do advantage.
You say
let's,
beautiful. Your face has changed.
Let's do it.
The gesture on your face, the emotion is... Well, the colour's drained.
No, the advantage. I played an advantage the other day and I was quite happy with that one.
Oh, congratulations.
I could have used my signals better, but...
Here we go.
Now we're going on to advantage, right? We have only got 10 minutes on this. So, we had a disagreement over the signals many, many moons ago.
Come on, then.
And I was being assessed at a game and I played the advantage, but I had the arms out in front of me, but pointing downwards. Mm-hmm. And the assessor, whose name I've forgotten, but is a very good friend of yours from Bridgewater, he told me that I should be running up there like that with my arms in the air.
No way. I'll have words with that assessor.
Do you know who I'm talking about? As a friend to a friend.
I think I do.
Yeah.
But you... Tell me, when you're running, and any athlete, any sprinter,
this is it. Any
sportsman, have you ever seen a sportsman running with his hands above his head?
No, which is why I ran.
Why do we do that?
No, exactly.
Why are we promoting that idea? The advantage signal is changed in the last couple of years, and I go back to those couple of years that you missed out on. The advantage signal can now be demonstrated with a one-arm straightforward gesture.
Right, okay.
You know? And that's how you do it. You don't have to have two arms out displaying advantage signal. And the easiest thing for me is when I was running as a referee, the easiest thing to do is to put my arms out in front of me. Mm-hmm. Because at some stage, when I'm running, my arms come out in front of me because of the running style. Mm. So all you have to do now is keep moving and your arms are automatically in that position for advantage signal.
Obviously,
hold it
and shout it as well.
Yeah, sell it
and really sell it.
But some people might say milk it.
Yeah, absolutely milk it.
Show how good your decision is.
But if you're holding one arm out, okay,
yeah,
potentially that might give the wrong impression to somebody at the other end of the field of play.
Good point.
They might think you've given a free kick, or they might think that you've given... You might be giving a throw-in or something.
That has been discussed many, many times since that was introduced.
But at least everybody knows the advantage.
Yeah.
You know.
The former advantage signal was always two-handed, but the IFAB panel, they decided that it was acceptable to use a one-arm signal gesture. And, you know, that is very, very well used at the senior levels. Mm. There are still some referees that learnt their skills using the two-arm signal, and that's not conflict. That's just, you know, how things have developed.
At the level that you would be assessing or observing, should I say, is advantage something these days that is promoted? Because there was a period of time, wasn't there, when you were encouraged to try and play advantage as much as possible?
For me, I always look to see if it impacts on match control or decision making, you know, and that's where I'm looking at. Why do we take a risk with advantage? This is my personal opinion. In terms of advantage, is a gamble. You're taking a gamble on a foul that you may have seen and detected, but you've allowed that possible foul. I'll call that a half foul. You allow that to go. You then allow the player to get up and get on with the game still, because that's what he's showing. And all of a sudden, he comes under challenge by another player. And then within another 2 yards, he comes under challenge by another player. We are putting our match control at risk by letting half fouls go that accumulate in the end to a big foul and a sanction that possibly could have been avoided. If you nick the first foul, the game is stopped. That's safe. Mm. That's safe refereeing. I think some of us try to put our match profile up. They like to increase it for good reasons, and I've got no problem with understanding that. But when it bounces back at them and it's not a good decision to have tried to play advantage, and you've put the player's safety at risk, he's taken a heavy challenge, and you've now got a big admonishment of the player that's committed the offence, or you've even got a sanction for him. Mm. I think we sometimes gamble unnecessarily, and that's my point.
Is there a period of time that you would suggest, 10 seconds, 15 seconds before you decide to pull it back?
15 seconds?
That's a long time, isn't it?
Shall I turn the microphone off now and see how long 15 seconds is?
Okay, we'll do a count of 15. We're going to shut up for 15 seconds, starting from now. Wow, that... is actually...
There you go. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
It's recognising that pause in play when you decide, do I play advantage or do I not? It is 2-3 seconds at best is what I think is that in time in which to recognise the offence and decide to play advantage or not. If you get to 15 seconds
15
next time,
seconds.
Darren, we need to talk.
No, I've never let it go. I've probably let it go to about 5 seconds.
Okay. That's not nothing wrong
and
with
that
trying
was
en- that.
That was enough for me
and,
to...
And hopefully, if you had to pull it back, people have recognised what you're trying to do.
I was very verbal with it as well.
Without the risk.
Yeah, I was very verbal with it. And when I blew the whistle to pull it back, I was... making it obvious that, you know, I played the advantage, but it hasn't worked or whatever, and then pulled it back.
Mm. Okay. Let's talk about areas on the field of play then for advantage.
Okay.
Where are you not going to play advantage?
In the first third.
What do you call the first third?
Where your defense line is.
Yeah. A foul by the forward on the defender. The ball rolls to another defender who's clearly got time to control it, and he wellies it up the field of play. Wellies, is that a national word or just a West Country?
hoofs it.
So he hoofs it upfield.
Yeah.
That's not advantage. That is just clearing your decks.
Yeah.
And there's no possession in hoofing it upfield, hoping that the number nine is going to get it and chase it and go through on goal. That is 50-50 football, and that's not advantage.
Yeah.
that's you know, just a risk. So don't do it. So I would say in defensive areas, when conditions are a little bit squidgy, the ball doesn't roll very well, and you're trying to wait to see if the ball rolls across the back four because the fullback has been fouled, and the ball will run to the next player and it will go along the back four. At some stage, if the conditions are squidgy, that ball could slow up, get caught up in the grass, the mud, and then the attacking team gain the advantage. That's a disadvantage to the team that team that got fouled. So don't use the advantage to a disadvantage. In defensive areas, don't play it. That's my recommendation.
And the credibility of doing an advantage in that position would make you look very odd.
Yeah. Where do you want your credibility to be heightened then?
I would suggest in the final third.
Ooh, that's a great area if you get it right.
Yeah, but it has to be right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a great feeling.
The pressure is on when you do it there. But when you get it right, it's a beauty.
Yeah. It's a great feeling. And a lot of satisfaction. There aren't too many players that are turned around and say, great advantage, ref. Mm. Unless, of course, you're clever enough to say, advantage. And then everybody knows what you've done. And he goes through and he scores in the next phase of play. Someone will come back and say, well done, ref.
Yeah.
that's how you sell it. That's how you milk it. And that's not being naughty. That's just making sure that you communicate effectively. Because that's the big thing with advantage. Communication, visual and audible.
Yeah.
You know, voice, play advantage. I wouldn't advise colleagues to use play on. Because that's not telling people that you've seen a foul.
No, of course not.
There are referees that use that terminology. Mm. They do say play on. What does that mean?
No, you need to be audible.
Have you seen a foul or have you not? Mm. If you've seen a foul, advantage, you know, and that's how it happens. And these are the things that we learn. For me, when I first started that refereeing career, I never knew all these bits and pieces. Mm. I've had to learn it, like all our referees learn it. You know, we're not born referees. We're born to learn, and my choice was to learn the laws of the game, become a referee when I did.
And that's the reason why we do this podcast, so hopefully you can benefit from certainly the experience of Rich and his background. We're literally just over our 20 minutes, so we need to stop it there. Okay, and that's the end of this particular episode. Are there any areas of advantage that we haven't covered that we perhaps need to go back to in the next episode? Very quickly.
We could have a little look and see if we've missed any significant areas on the advantage clause.
We'll,
it is a clause.
It is a clause, of course. And we will have a look at that. And in the meantime, don't forget you can listen to the Referees World podcast through the website. Go to refereesworld.co.uk. You can fill out the little subscribing button and then you'll be notified by an email when the next episode is out. You can listen on Apple Podcasts and you can listen on Spotify as well. Thanks very much for listening in this episode. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do via our Facebook page or indeed on Twitter. Just search out Referees World.
The download is complete.
This is the Referees World podcast.